Welcome to this week's Richland Roundtable. It's a conversation with local people that's of interest to local people. On this week's Richland Roundtable, we'll visit with Clint Langrick, Richland County Administrator, Rose Cahoot, the Richland County Public Health Manager and Local Health Officer, and Angie Alexander, the Director of Nursing at Pine Valley Community Village. Again, welcome to this week's Richland Roundtable. I'm Ron Fruit. Our first guest on this week's Richland Roundtable is Clint Langrick. Clint serves as Richland County's administrator. I visited with Clint about the impacts on Richland County of recent decisions at the state and federal level.
The state level this week, we saw on the 27th on Monday, another order that was issued out by the governor through the Department of Health Services called Order 34, interim order to turn the dial. And part of that was a little bit more of an effort to expand some different services to our businesses. It allowed for curbside drop-offs for some of our what was considered kind of non-essential businesses now have the ability for us to drop off pets and other types of goods for services and repairs. So that hopefully helps kindle some more economic types of activities, as well as it did allow for outdoor recreational rentals and as well as car washes. So it would just impact that little bits and pieces of the economy, but hopefully that helps encourage folks and able to conduct some more business. It really kind of goes along with additional notes that were given in the update for the Safer at Home Act, some updates to the Frequently Asked Questions website that we saw, as well as what rolled out, as well as the Badger Bounce Back Plan, kind of a little bit more robust outlay of capturing what are the different expectations on personal sanitation and different social distancing aspects and how it affects different industries. So it's becoming a little bit more of a solidified plan. Another resource that folks can kind of go to visualize it is through the Department of Health Services website underneath their COVID-19 section, kind of captures the plan with some nice images and graphics. It breaks down the different gatings of what we're looking for symptoms and for cases and hospitalizations, and looking for those downward trajectories to be able to say, okay, we've crossed this criteria. Now we can open up more businesses and move through the phase progression. So that's kind of big pieces that we see moving, but it's still kind of in the gray. This being the first time any of us have ever endeavored into something like this, it still hasn't quite gotten to a point of black and white yet, Ron.
Well, Clint, as you think about the things that you're doing to try to prepare Richland County for maybe the loosening of the restrictions and opening up a bit, there are going to be some guidelines that we're going to have to follow as residents to be able to keep that happening as we would all like to see it happen, aren't we?
Certainly, and I guess, to speak for everybody, but I'm assuming nearly everybody is at a point of fatigue with the COVID isolations. I would imagine 95% of folks are at a point of frustration with the inconveniences it has caused, and unfortunately a growing number of folks are at a point now of desperation resulting from the actions that we've taken to try to protect ourselves. From a county type of a level, the actions that we continue to take is that we're still trying to promote our public health aspect of it, as I'm sure you'll hear through Rose, and the shifting of more and more responsibility on the individual to help police up and help control our spread. With this also from a county level is that we still maintain a huge responsibility on helping protect our most vulnerable. At the county level as well, too, we deal with the enforcement aspect of it. As this different guidance comes out of how we're supposed to be behaving as individuals, as how we're supposed to be behaving as businesses and organizations, people look to us and through our sheriff's department and through local law enforcement and district attorney on how we're going to be enforcing these regulations. And thankfully, and I have to praise the folks of Richland County, it's been handled through self-enforcement. We've been able to provide folks with education and reasons on why, and largely most folks and businesses are self-complying because they realize the importance of the public health safety aspect of it as well. And as I'm sure Rose is going to tell you folks again, it's as we move towards being able to stimulate the economy and trying to mitigate the impacts on people's livelihoods, we're going to carry a bigger burden on trying to impact our ability to still protect lives.
Well, we see the EOC continuing to operate for the near future, Clint, do you believe?
As of right now, it's going to stay stood up. We're going to be operating it on a daily capacity, Some of that is already now transitioning towards efforts towards recovery and trying to get ourselves in positions for in different grant reimbursements and trying to still connect folks that are eligible for the different programs, whether it's at a household family impact or for a business impact. But more of our conversation pieces are transitioning from that response and stopping the spread. We feel like we're in a position now where we've addressed and kind of gotten to a point where we can, take our finger off that button, but at least be able to kind of put more efforts and more diligence into communicating now what the recovery elements look like, but not losing sight of again, maintaining that safety posture, because as we've talked about time and time again, if we take efforts to loosen restrictions and allow for freedoms of commerce and movements, and our numbers go back up, then those things can be restricted again and could have even more devastating impacts.
What direction would you point us, Clint, for reliable information locally and otherwise?
Well, I guess, we still feed off from the state. So our main source that we go to for vetted information is through the Department of Health. So I encourage folks to reach out to dhs.wisconsin.gov. And you can access off their webpage through the Get the Latest on the COVID or the Safer at Home Badger Bounce Back Plan. It's all laid on at the very top of their website. And, of course, we encourage folks to reach out to our website as well at covid.richland.wi.us as we try to keep up with up-to-date information that impacts us here at home.
Final word you'd like to share on this week's Richland Roundtable, Clint?
I just want to continue to keep people in focus on maintaining vigilance. This is unfortunately a situation that is carrying on, is going to continue to carry on. It's another terrific example of how, as we engage in society, we hit situations like this where our individual freedoms come at ends with quality and safety, public safety. And this is another kind of indicator of that, of how we have to kind of reach a compromise through how we behave to protect our livelihoods and to protect the lives of those most vulnerable. So I want to encourage folks to continue their vigilance on personal protection, on keeping themselves safe, as well as trying to mitigate their possibilities of spreading to others, and thank everybody for all their efforts that they've put forward to this point.
Clint Langrick is Richland County Administrator. On this week's Richland Roundtable, we now turn our focus toward public health. Rose Cahoot is Richland County's public health manager and local health officer. Rose, another week has passed by, and I've heard people say, it's almost like we missed April entirely, but here we are in May, we're making progress, and I guess that's the good news, isn't it?
It is definitely good news. I know that as the weather warms and perhaps as the restrictions get relaxed a bit here with the Safer at Home order, folks will be wanting to definitely enjoy being outside and engaging more with their community.
How do we stay healthy, Rose, as we're getting out more and maybe there's more movement of people as restrictions are relaxed? Will that be a big challenge for us and for you in public health?
It may definitely create concerns, and we know that as folks begin the process of being more engaged in their community, we have more individuals moving about. We know that there are more folks that we may come in contact with, maybe in a shorter distance than 6 feet. We understand that there will be more folks, touching surfaces as well that we may not have the opportunity to clean. So there are more risks for exposure as more individuals begin to leave their homes and maybe even congregate a bit more in public spaces. So there's a definite concern that can be associated with that activity. Even though being outside is healthy and the fresh air and sunshine are good, the exposure to other folks kind of is a bit of a counterbalance to the health that we see being out in our environment. We know that COVID isn't gone, and I think that's a very important point to make, that we may need to have a heightened awareness of what we're doing when we're out around more folks. We are probably going to be more need to be more aware of distancing ourselves as much as we possibly can when we're engaged in conversations. If we have a mask available, it would be good for us to wear that while we're out, so that we can help protect others from us. Many times, folks who are asymptomatic have the ability to shed the virus. So we want to continue with our efforts to the highest degree possible to maintain distance and to engage in personal hygiene and safety measures, particularly now when we're going to be around more individuals and may not have the opportunity to control our circumstances like we do when we're more at home.
Let's talk a little bit more, if we can, about the mask, Rose. And you said protecting others from us. That's an important concept, isn't it?
It is. And when folks wear masks, both surgical masks and the cloth face coverings or the homemade masks are intended to protect others from us, from any moisture or droplets that we may produce when we are talking, if we would cough or sneeze. It helps to contain those droplets that we might actually transmit to other folks. So considering, I would highly encourage folks to consider wearing masks when they're in public. We see more and more of our friends and neighbors doing so, and it may be difficult maybe the first time you wear a mask out, particularly if you're in a store or in a venue, and you may feel self-conscious. But know that you are doing your best to protect your community and the friends and the family members that you may come in contact with if you're in a store or an area of that sort. So it's so important to really consider keeping others safe as we try to protect ourselves from others.
It seems that maybe we need to think about our own attitude when we see someone else wearing a mask, Rose, where we might think, oh, they're sick. Maybe we need to think, oh, they're protecting me so I don't get sick.
Absolutely true. And I think that's a great way to reframe how we see others. For a long period of time, we've seen pictures of individuals maybe in Southeast Asian countries and where folks wear a mask on a much more frequent basis. But knowing that we're protecting others from us, even though we may be feeling well, we just don't know if there's the possibility that we could have been exposed and may be just asymptomatic and shedding that. So, yes, when we wear a mask, we're being very responsible for the folks in our communities. And we want to make sure that we keep everyone healthy to kind of help contain any transmission.
If I remember right, Rose, you said it doesn't even have to be a fancy mask. It could be a bandana.
Yes, it could be a bandana. It could be something homemade from a piece of a T-shirt that's cut up and rolled, and rubber bands can be used as ear loops. Or you can be, can be much more creative and if you're able to sew, you can make one. But no, it doesn't need to be anything that is extraordinary. It just needs to act as a barrier for protection.
How often should that fabric mask be washed, Rose?
The ideal scenario would be that it would be washed after each use. So if you're having it on for a period of time, and not only is it containing droplets that you're producing on the inside of the mask, but also we understand that you may also have exposure to other types of droplets or other types of pathogens that come from the outside of the mask. Best case scenario is to carefully remove it and put it in a bag. If you can't immediately wash it. But if you have the opportunity, please wash it. Ideally would be daily or before each use. So if folks have the opportunity to have more than one mask, if they're going to be accessing their community on a frequent basis, that would be ideal.
Rose, one of the things I wanted to say was, and it seems like it's an analogy to influenza in the community and the education you've tried to do with us, that we see ebbs and flows in the number of patients with influenza and maybe a second or third season. Remembering that, we need to put that analogy toward COVID-19, don't we?
Right. We are looking at a virus that we're not very familiar with. And as more data and more information becomes available, and also as we get time and distance from the onset of this disease, we'll be in much better positions to make decisions. We are very familiar with influenza and how a particular strain may begin in a season, and perhaps a second strain may begin later in the season. And so we're a bit more familiar However, the same principles for safety, given that these are both respiratory illnesses, should apply. Again, that social distancing, even though we'd like to maybe start not doing things of that sort because we're so anxious to just go back to the way things were before, we just have to just change our mindset so that we really are aware of where we are in proximity, folks, and that we're really maintaining all of those preventive measures, because not only does it protect us from COVID-19, these are very good measures to continue to protect us from influenza in upcoming seasons.
Rose, so many more tests are available now today, and that's certainly an important topic of discussion. Is that helping public health to be able to have access to additional testing?
I know if we take a look at the numbers of tests that are run, whether it be statewide or countywide, and we take a look at the numbers of folks who actually test positive, I am hoping that if, as we have a larger number of tests that are performed, we can begin to take a look at the ratio between those who are positive and those who are negative. I would hope that if I am looking at the numbers correctly, that as that ratio goes down, so if we're looking at maybe one out of every, 10 right now, if we start noticing that there's only maybe, 0.5 positive tests for each 10 negative tests, then that may give us some sense that perhaps the prevalence of that of COVID-19 in the community may be decreasing. Of course, it all depends on who gets tested as well, and we understand that folks that are asymptomatic typically don't get tested, so we just have to be so very careful that we're very aware of maintaining the distance and doing everything we can to prevent that, because not every individual who may have a confirmed case of COVID is going to be tested. So it's just, we have to be so careful.
And in the meantime, wash my hands and cough into my sleeve.
That's very true. That is our best way. All the tools that we have available, we need to use daily. And the more we put those into practice, the more automatic they will become.
Our thanks to Rose Cahoot for taking time out of her busy schedule to be our guest. Rose serves Richland County as public health manager and local health officer. The final segment of this week's Richland Roundtable focuses on Pine Valley Community Village. It's a pleasure to introduce you to Angie Alexander, who's the Director of Nursing at Pine Valley Community Village. Angie, over time, you and I have had a lot of conversations about protecting the health and well-being of residents at Pine Valley Community Village. In some ways, it seems our conversation today is similar to those in the past, but in some ways, it seems like it's incredibly different.
I think you're very right. We always have a challenge in during cold and flu season or whenever we have illness in our community to keep it from entering our building because our residents are so vulnerable. As we've talked before, they can get much sicker, much quicker with things like this. So, and we've had to do just a lot of things to try to protect our residents.
Angie, when we first started to learn about COVID-19 and think about the ramifications for a place like Pine Valley Community Village, it made me really apprehensive for you, even though I realize that you deal with the most vulnerable population every day and respect it to the utmost. But I still thought, gosh, this is kind of scary.
I have to say, I'm still nervous, even with all the preparation. There's just so much information coming at us so quickly and changing, sometimes daily, that I think the scariest part for me is to make sure that all of the staff here are on the same page, because, and how we are, working to communicate all those changes with our staff, it can be a challenge.
Angie, let's talk a little bit about the safety measures that you've put into place during COVID-19.
Oh, absolutely. We have had to close our facility to all visitors. Only very essential personnel can come into the building. And this has probably been the hardest thing because it's so hard on our residents. We screen any worker that enters the building for temperature and symptoms of the virus and possible exposures. And if there's any question, they just can't come in. We screen our residents for temperatures and other symptoms at least every 8 hours. Our employees are held to a really tight exemption from work policy if they even have mild respiratory illness until COVID can be ruled out, or for that matter, anything that's infectious. Physician visits have been limited to telehealth visits only, which is quite a change for our residents and staff. Our staff have had to really work together with county IT and our medical records people here to make that happen. And, of course, a lot of cooperation with the clinic and hospital. Dr. Smith is now serving all of our residents, so we don't have so many people coming and going from the building. And he's here Monday through Friday to assist us with the many changes we've had to implement. We have had to change respiratory treatments because if you listen to the news, some of those things that they call aerosolizing the virus can increase the risk to residents and staff. So we've had to minimize or change those, and Dr. Smith's been so helpful with that. Residents' needs are met here whenever possible, and appointments outside the facility only happen when it's absolutely medically necessary. And even then, many precautions are taken. Things like dialysis and that kind of thing, of course, have to continue to happen, but we have to take extra safe, extra measures to make sure that that's a safe thing. Of course, additional cleaning and sanitizing of high-touch surfaces and equipment is in place. And our maintenance department has converted two of our rooms to COVID rooms where they've been able to enhance the air exchange and special equipment is there in the event that we do have a resident that tests positive and they can't be transferred out to the hospital. New admissions and readmissions are screened carefully, and additional measures have to be taken for them to keep them safe, as well as everyone here. And, of course, lots and lots of training and time devoted to keep staff updated on the many changes that have occurred every day.
Just think, Angie, if you were trying to do this in the old Pine Valley building.
Oh, my gosh, we've had that conversation. Dr. Smith and I talked about that together with the nurse managers, Rachel and Melissa, and none of us could even imagine what that would look like. You know, we had, you know, roommates, and we didn't have good air exchange because it was an older building, and visits with the window visits that we can allow here couldn't happen there because it just wouldn't have been conducive the way the building was built. So I can't imagine, and I'm so very grateful for this building.
Angie, we hear everyone talking about thinking ahead. What's it going to be like when the restrictions are relaxed and so forth? Are you and others at Pine Valley looking ahead? How can we serve residents, and how will we be able to transition in the coming weeks and months?
Absolutely. Dr. Ryan Westergaard, he's the chief medical officer for the Wisconsin Department of Public Health. He actually spoke to this a bit on the weekly call because many facilities are fearful of things opening up. We all know that it has to come because we can't live like this forever. But one of the things that people can start doing now and continue to do is wear their face coverings when they're in public. You know, you're not doing this to keep yourself safe. I've heard people say, oh gosh, I'm not afraid of it. If I get it, I'll be fine. But we really are doing that to protect the most vulnerable from the virus. Also to help keep our healthcare workers who are out in public, keep them safe. They don't want to get ill because we need them, but also they don't want to expose their patients. Bringing it into the facility would just be devastating. I think we can continue to practice social distancing, and even when we begin seeing the loosening of the restrictions opening up Wisconsin, I really believe that we can limit the spread. When that starts to happen, when the time is right, if we all do our part. And, of course, you know, just the good old basics like washing your hands. I think those are the things we can do to help keep our community well. And in the end, that helps to keep our residents safe.
And that's going to be your top priority. It is every day, but it's certainly going to be. And you need our help as a community to understand what it is that you'll be doing in the future, don't you?
Absolutely. We've been told that we may not be able to open up when other businesses can open up because of our vulnerable population. And we need all of these things to happen as soon as possible. So following those very basic things that I just talked about are really some of the things we can do to bring this along.
Is there something we can do as a community now? Are there suggestions you're making for families and relatives, Angie?
Oh, my gosh. Calling, writing letters. You know, I think we forget sometimes we're so used to emailing that what the power of a card or a letter can mean, especially to our residents. That's normal in their, you know, generation, and it can really brighten their day. We've seen families send care packages and positive comments and cards to the staff. Just all of those things are so appreciated, and it makes our residents and families and staff not feel so alone in all of this.
Are you able to take new residents? Let's say something happens to me and I need the services of Pine Valley. Is that a possibility, Angie?
Oh, gosh, yes. It is. That's, nothing has changed. As always, we're admitting residents that need our services. Our therapy department, even though they're not seeing outpatients right now, are still working every day to meet the residents' rehab needs. So absolutely. We do take some extra measures to make sure that people are screened before they come, and that they may be some extra measures that we're taking when they first arrive to keep them safe and to keep all of us safe. But right now, yes, we're open for business. We want to continue to help our community as we always have.
Is there anything you'd like to add to the community and share from Pine Valley Community Village, Angie?
Well, just a couple things. First of all, you know, I can't thank the community enough for all of their support. They have donated, you know, just numerous cloth masks, other personal protective equipment, cards of thanks, candy, donuts, you know, cards, meals. The generosity is, as always in our community, just very overwhelming and very appreciated by the staff and residents here. The other thing is, I hope the community knows that we're doing all we can to keep our residents happy and engaged. We've had to put some limitations on things that we didn't want to have to do, you know, limiting the group dining and limiting big group activities and that kind of thing. But our activity department has gotten really creative in what they can do, and a lot of us have had to step up and help with that. You know, we've done a lot of extra things with technology, you know, FaceTiming with families and those types of things as well. And I think that if anyone is interested in reaching out to a friend or a resident here, contact our activity department and we will help you with that. We have the equipment to do that, and as long as we know when you're going to be calling in, we can help.
Angie Alexander has been our guest in this part of Richland Roundtable. Angie is the Director of Nursing at Pine Valley Community Village. Thanks for being with us for this edition of Richland Roundtable. A thanks again to Angie Alexander, to Rose Cahoot, and Clint Langrick for being our guests. And, of course, to you for listening to Richland Roundtable.